From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. Welcome to Soundings. Moral Judgment in Modern History. That's the topic this week on Soundings. My guest is a scholar who recently completed a fellowship year at the National Humanities Center. She is Hedva Ben Israel of the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. In awarding the 1986 Nobel Peace Prize to the writer and historian Elie Wiesel, the Norwegian Nobel Committee called Wiesel a messenger to mankind, one of the most important spiritual leaders and guides in an age when violence, repression, and racism continue to characterize the world. The moral dimension underlying much of Wiesel's writing is central to Hedva Ben Israel's forthcoming study of moral judgment in modern history. Hedva Ben Israel, you come to the Humanities Center from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. You are working on a project with the title Moral Judgment in Modern Historiography. Now, let's see if we can make change on a 50-cent term. Those are some large words. Why should historians consider the problem of value judgments, moral judgments, in the writing and the doing of modern history?
Well, it's always been like that. In a recent review of a film, one of the reviewers said, thank God for historians. With their expertise, with their selection of materials, with their approved methods, they will teach us how to judge this historical film, whether it's true or not. Mm-hmm. Society seems always to have put a moral responsibility on historians to interpret its past for it in a meaningful way, sort of guide it through its heritage, and be a moral tutor, in a way.
Is that because people don't want to do this for themselves? Do you feel a particular burden here as a historian?
No, it is a burden, but I think it's not because people don't want to do it. I think because they ascribe this duty to professional historians. They trust their methods, they trust their systems,
right,
and they want to know what their conclusions are, what their guiding lines are.
All right, but Hedva Ben Israel, historians are supposed to be objective. They are not supposed to make judgments. We have a paradox here, don't we?
Right. Well, this has, again, not always been so. Uh-huh. Historians were always used to making moral judgments, and history was supposed to be teaching by the experience of the past. Well, sometime in the middle of the 19th century, we had a historiographical revolution. Mm-hmm. History from then on was supposed to be objective, neutral, marshal the facts, describe things as they were, and not impose the historian's views. This was a very attractive proposition. It made history so much more scientific. And this was a period when science, of course, was gaining in reputation, and the historians thought better of themselves in doing their work this way.
Now, this would have been more or less commensurate with the time, with the rise of what we now call the modern university.
With the modern university, with the opening of the archives, with more systematic research, and history became more objective. Now, there were drawbacks to this, because what happened was that this was carried very far in some ways, and some historians reacted to this new tendency as if it were degrading or corrupting the profession rather than elevating it. They said historians are now walking with a mop behind the bloody tyrants, and mopping with a sponge to mop up the blood of tyrants. They are describing everything as if it were necessary, justified, and nothing is left for judgment. The greatest of the historians protesting against that was the English historian Lord Acton, whose name is almost synonymous with moral judgment. And he more or less demanded of historians to don the cap and send to the gallows the criminals of history. There was, as I say, history became professional, it became neutral, it became objective, historians left more and more of themselves out of the story, but there was also a reaction against it. Nevertheless, I think to the middle of our century, history, the ideals were generally accepted to be a value-free historiography. But I think some change came in with the Second World War and after the end of the Second World War.
Now, this would have been simply because of the enormity of the moral issues involved in the Second World War. That, I take it, would be one of the strong contributing factors to the restitution of moral judgment in historiography.
Yes, I think you're right. I think partly it was the enormity of the issues involved about which historians wrote. I mean, people could hardly could not easily bring themselves to write about the Second World War, the causes of the Second World War. I mean, even about the First World War, can one write about the post-First World War settlements, the Woodrow Wilson intentions of reforming the whole world and reconstructing it on new principles? Can that be really treated without the moral dimension? Mm-hmm. This was the problem. What I claim, I think, is that the moral dimension of public affairs has become more prominent than in pre-democratic times, when public affairs were more or less business arrangements between rulers. Uh-huh. And since the language of the moral dimension has become woven into the fabric of public affairs, the historians could no longer ignore it.
All right, they see a responsibility there. Now, let's assume, for the purposes of our conversation, Hedva Ben Israel, we're talking about morality and the use of judgments in the doing of history. Let's assume that this is a good thing, that we bring a moral dimension to history. That leaves us with the question of what? The qualifications of the people who are making these judgments. How do we know that they're reliable? How do we know that that their private, moral yardsticks are sufficient for the doing of history and putting this stuff into public circulation?
We don't.
Yeah.
We don't. We have to assume with historians, as with all other professions, that they would do their best, and they would not be subjective in their selection of material, in their examination of evidence, where rigorous scientific and impersonal standards are, of course, necessary. Some would take even more trouble, I think, in being fair to the cause they hate than to the cause they follow. But it's not a question of their condemning or praising.
Uh-huh.
It's not a question of their saying this is good, this is bad. This is not what is meant usually by value judgments in history.
What do you have in mind,
then? What I do mean is not to leave the moral dimension out.
Uh-huh.
When you talk about motivation in a public figure, in a ruler, in a dictator, or in a government, or in a people, or in a group of people, you... the historian always feels obliged to consider their interests, their economic interests, their motivation, their social background, their connections. Everything else is legitimately taken into account.
Except morality.
In valuing the motivation of a particular act or move. But so why should the moral dimension be left out?
All right.
It is part of human life.
All right, this is a compelling case that you make. Hedva Ben Israel, our topic is moral judgment in modern history. Tell me about a historical period or an event that might illustrate this, the perils and rewards of bringing value judgments to the doing of history.
Well, I think the most obvious example is this of the origins of the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
This was, as you know, a debatable subject. It wasn't debated during the war. Everybody knew who caused the war and why caused the war, and nobody doubted it, nobody questioned it. And at the end of the war, the Nuremberg judgments seemed to have stamped a certain interpretation indelibly on people's minds. They said the war was caused and willed by one side.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought together the Nuremberg judgments, both historical research of the documented evidence, moral judgment, historical reconstruction of how it all happened, and this seemed so authoritative and that nobody questioned it for a long time.
Well, now, why are they questioning it now?
And then later people came to the, said, it cannot, history doesn't work that way. Great events, such as the Second World War, don't spring fully armed out of the head of one man. There must be other people who've taken part in some way or another by sins of omission or commission. But the picture cannot be black and white of one side being completely sinful and the other guiltless. And this is what we call revisionism.
If we could isolate an element or a dimension, for example, economic or social, military, that sort of thing, which of these might you
use? Well, I give you, well, you mentioned economic causes. And if you take a side issue, not perhaps very central, but I think important, that British policy, for instance, I mean, we always talk about appeasement of the Nazis, and people think that appeasement, some people think that appeasement means cringing before this raised fist.
Yeah, here you'd be talking about Mr. Chamberlain.
Right, but appeasement was not that at all. Appeasement started long before Hitler ever came to power. Appeasement meant that in after the First World War, a wrong was done to Germany, that the peace was too strict, the punishment was too heavy, and that the European system is thereby impaired, and that we have to restore a sort of more natural balance to Europe, not a too camp Europe, but rather a more balanced system of powers. And so that appeasement was based on a concept of the European system rather than on being afraid from the raised fist of the Nazis. This is one thing. And another thing, appeasement of Britain, which was generally taken later to be a great mistake, after all it had encouraged and so forth, it was also based on the assumption that what was wrong with Germany was her economic difficulties, and that if economic appeasement were practiced, if her, if she were given more sources of raw materials, perhaps her colonies should be given back to her or some such a thing, then the European system could be stabilized. So, I've just given you a couple of examples to widen the picture in a way and to take into account a great many more contributing factors.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You're listening to a discussion about moral judgment in modern history. My guest is a scholar who recently completed a fellowship year at the National Humanities Center. Hedva Ben Israel of the Hebrew University in Jerusalem is the author of a forthcoming study about moral judgment in modern historiography. According to Hedva Ben Israel, moral judgment in the writing of modern history nearly disappeared during the second half of the 19th century, replaced by an ideal of absolute objectivity. But under the stress of the great political revolutions of the first half of the 20th century, together with the impact of World War II, historians are now reevaluating the role and importance of moral judgment in modern historical scholarship. How do historians figure these things out? How do they talk to one another? Is this what sort of accounts for what we call schools of history?
Right. It does account for, I mean, some... There have been great debates about this problem ever since the early 50s. Some historians have taken, have been so appalled by the enormity of the problems with which they have to deal that some have said, I mean, some of the greatest historians have said, leave judgment to God and just stick to technical history. And some have said, no, history doesn't work this way. History is is not deterministic. History is not neutral. History is full of free choices of people. And the historian is there to evaluate those free choices as well as any other. But you've asked how it is done. And it isn't just by spreading the picture wider. It's also by using a very fine microscope. I'll give you one example for that. I mean, take the Munich 1938 situation. We all know that Czechoslovakia, there was an internal problem. There were 3.5 million Germans living within this new Czech state. The 3.5 million Germans were not happy within Czechoslovakia. Hitler used this grievance to say Czechoslovakia is persecuting the Germans and so forth. And the British came to Germany and said, we will divide Czechoslovakia, you get the part with the 3.5 million Germans. This is more or less the Munich situation. And this has been the outstanding case of moral judgment in historiography, because Munich has become a synonym for shameful politics.
That's right.
I mean, giving away Czechoslovakia to its executioner, more or less.
So what? Now let me stop you. Are you going to tell me then that that England was justified in its policy, or
no. I'm going to say two things. I'm going to say one, that it was not an isolated, new, random choice. That in fact, all the forces of Europe, from all directions, have been working towards some such catastrophe for the Czechoslovak state ever since it was established in 1918. I mean, both the German foreign policy, as the development of German foreign policy on the one hand, the development of appeasement policy in England on the other hand, the internal quarrel within Czechoslovakia between the Germans and the Czechs, have all been coming to a head so that after 20 years, some change was absolutely, I think, historically necessary. But this does not mean determinism. This does not mean that no other way could have been found, or that this should have come, or that this should have been allowed to go that far. And that, I mean, we know that all the usual arguments about whether Hitler should have been stopped earlier, you know, whether appeasement policy was necessary, etc., etc. But even when we talk about Czechoslovakia itself, there was, even inside of Czechoslovakia, we can find points to analyze with the question of judgment, but not of condemning or justifying, just understanding the human actions involved.
Is it possible that we can look at moral issues in history and make some shaky predictions about the way we're going to live in the future? Does this enter into the issue of doing and making moral judgments in history? Is that really one of the items on the agenda for modern historiography?
Well, it's an interesting question. I haven't dealt with it very much, but I'll try to put my mind to it. I think one of the basic arguments about moral judgment boils down to what you have just said. Can we find in history good and bad causes? Will the world improve by our backing the good causes, the good nations? Is evil centered somewhere and can be fought or eliminated? This is one point of view. This is the utopian point of view. This is the point of view that is often associated with American foreign policy.
Right.
We will go out and reform we will localize and eliminate the sources of evil and build a new world in which right principles will guide everybody. But this is just one view. The other view is, and I'm afraid this is what, and this to answer your previous question, is that it's the human nature, the nature of human beings and of human societies, make all progress relative. That in fact, we cannot learn from history, we cannot learn from it that somewhere in the future there is an absolute paradise where we shall all live in peace and so forth. What we can learn is that you can slightly improve, you can be very wise and tolerant and cooperative and find ways of ameliorating life among the nations.
Hedvigman Israel, we're talking about moral judgment in modern history, historiography. Let me be specific here with you. President Reagan is widely known for his phrase, the evil empire, when he talks about the Soviet Union. How, maybe you want to talk personally, maybe you want to speak, as it were, you know, as a representative of the modern professional enterprise. How is that kind of phrase received? That obviously has a moral dimension, and it obviously has a strong intent behind it in when the president uses words like that.
It's exactly about this that I was that I was talking previously when I said that the moral intent has been a contribution of America, I think, into world foreign policy in the 20th century.
You think this is a good thing on the whole?
Well, it is generally considered as having been too separated from reality to do much good.
Too simple, perhaps.
Too simple, too detached, too visionary, too utopian to have done any good.
Well, what would our alternatives be?
And the alternatives are: be realistic, meet power politics halfway, try and restrain it, and so forth. Now, I think, and I mean, I don't know if I represent anybody. I mean, I represent myself.
Right.
I think that without somebody speaking up, sometimes in moral terms, in ideological terms, in utopian terms, even in order to get people to adopt other ways, but having this in mind somewhere, I think the world would be in a worse way than it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a necessary part. I think proclaiming of moral purposes, moral intents, and so forth is a necessary part of politics, even though power politics will not, in the end, be guided by these lines.
Hedvigman Israel, we're talking about moral judgment in modern history. How would you characterize the responsibility of modern historians?
Right.
I mean, you have to grapple with issues like this. Here, particularly a fundamental one. Tell me about that.
Yes. What worries historians most, and I'm worried by it, though I think you've got the impression that I think moral judgment should not be left out.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, what one fears most is a sort of self-righteousness in historians.
Don't be smug.
Don't be smug. Mm-hmm. Don't shriek the self-righteousness of your side, your cause, your government, your nation.
Uh-huh.
Don't assume that there is always black and white. This is a very worrying thing, and I think most people who are against moral judgment in history are rightly against this.
Right.
Put your credentials on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Say what your starting point is.
Right.
And then discuss every case on its own merits.
Fair enough.
Don't be afraid to include value judgments, moral judgments, but don't act as if you are a judge who is
an
going
oracle
to send this man to the gallows, or
right,
you're condemning people to heaven or hell.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the purpose. The purpose is to analyze objectively and yet on different levels, even every human act.
Hedvigman Israel, our topic is moral judgment in modern history. Let's conclude our conversation. Why should people read history? Why should non-specialists come to it, apart from or integral with this notion of moral judgment in modern history? You said yourself a few minutes ago that people really don't know that much. We have bits and pieces of information. This is called modern journalism. How can we construct a sort of unified picture of the world that we live in order to find out whether you historians are telling us the truth?
I don't think we can. I don't think even historians can know the whole truth or come to a, well, some historians imagine that they have reached
right,
a meaningful synthesis, and then they bring out a theory of history or a philosophy of history, as Marx did or Toynbee did.
Yeah.
Right. But you're not asking me about that. You're asking me about the general public.
Sure.
And I mean, some historians are very flippant about it. They say, well, it's amusing, it's interesting, mm-hmm. and this is the whole use of history.
Becomes a game almost.
Well, a game and an intellectual
exercise
yeah. of reading about the past. Well, I think that's part of it. History is that it is interesting and it is amusing and it is fun to read.
Would you use a word like instructive? Could you go that far?
I might, but right. I think if one could be a little more serious about it, I think history is our past, and people don't live from one moment to another. Uh-huh. I mean, just as we have our personal memories and we have our personal aspirations for the future, we have also memories that go further than ourselves. And in fact, history is a way of finding out about who am I?
Right.
What kind of heritage do I carry in my mind? Or what kind of heritage could I carry in my mind if I only knew about it?
Right.
So I think in that sense, historians serve society by constantly bringing before its eyes the riches of the past, the connections with the different civilizations, their own and others. And I think they serve in a way the ideal of a unified humankind.
Hedva Ben Israel is a professor at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. During a recent fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, she worked on a forthcoming study of moral judgment in modern historical scholarship. The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. For a cassette copy of Soundings on Moral Judgment in Modern Historiography, send $3 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Next week on Soundings, a discussion about expression in classic music. My guest will be Y. Allenbrook of St. John's College in Annapolis, Maryland. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Listen to Soundings. This is Kim Nielsen at the National Humanities Center, inviting you to join Wayne Pond this week for a discussion about moral judgment in modern historical scholarship. Wayne's guest is a scholar from the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. Over the last 100 years, moral judgment in the writing of history nearly disappeared, but scholars are now reevaluating its role and importance. Moral judgment in modern historical scholarship, the topic this week on Soundings, from the National Humanities Center on this station.